everyone. Welcome to Reach Higher Riverside, where we share all Reach Higher stories happening across the nation. My name is Priscilla Grijalva, and I am your Reach Higher Riverside podcast host. On this month's episode, we have an interview with school counselors for MTSS. A few of our special guests are Damian Sweeney, Emily Goodman-Scott, and Jennifer Betters. I hope you guys enjoy this interview. All right. Hi, everyone. I'm with MTSS for school counselors. If you could please introduce yourselves and share your name and your current role.
Excellent. We're so excited to be here. I am Jennifer Betters Bouban. I'm an associate professor and program coordinator at the University of Wisconsin.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Emily Goodman-Scott here, hailing from Norfolk, Virginia on the East Coast. Previous school counselor, currently a counselor educator, school counselor educator, and faculty member at Old Dominion University, as well as overseeing our graduate program.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dr. Damian Sweeney. I'm the Director of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging at the Kentucky Department of Education. I'm also an adjunct professor at Spalding University and University of the Cumberland for school counselors.
Awesome. If you could tell our listeners what MTSS is, in case some people might not know what that is.
Absolutely. Happy to do that. So if you think of what is MTSS, so I'm going to try to not get too technical. Essentially, it's there's this framework that's used in so many different settings, and it actually originated out of public health, so out of this healthcare model. So I like to tell, you know, my grad students, if you were to imagine, you know, everyone gets a flu shot, and so that's like a tier one, right? Everyone's prevention. Everyone gets a flu shot. Some folks may still get sick. Maybe they need some medicine. Like a tier two, like some support. And then some folks may get really ill, a very small percentage, maybe a top 3-5% get very ill and have to be hospitalized. So it's really this public health model of addressing anything from healthcare, and it's been applied to education. So in education, we really look at our students and say, how can we provide supports, prevention, like the flu shot, right, to every student, whether that's reading curriculum or a social emotional curriculum. So whatever it is, focusing on the whole child, we have academics, we have behavior, we have social emotional learning, we have college and career, trauma-informed practices, really all parts of K-12 education we offer preventatively for all students. Some students may need a little extra support. Maybe Jason does really well with math, but he's struggling with self-regulation. Or maybe Tamika is doing very well with her social emotional learning components, like social skills, doing really well. And maybe she's struggling with being organized, and she needs to get pulled for a small group for that, or someone else needs more of a tier three supports where they're looking at more intensive services. So it's really a way of looking at the student as a whole child. And we as a school come together and look at using data. So how does data inform what we're doing? It's based on evidence-based practices. So what practices are we doing that are driven by evidence, by data? And we look at schools as a system rather than just the math department or just kindergarten. How are we as an entire system? And then our practices. So what are we doing for all tier one, some at tier two, and view at the tier three level. So colleagues, did I get the basics?
Yeah, I love that explanation. It's a great way to explain it, especially as people are still learning about it. I know as school counselors, it really helps us. Can you share like how you guys got involved with this work?
Jen, do you want to start?
Sure. Thanks, Emily, for that, the comprehensive explanation. I became involved in this work probably, close to 15 years ago, when I was a school counselor. So I really got involved in MTSS when I was a practicing school counselor. I was an elementary school counselor outside of Madison, Wisconsin. And we needed systems. I was faltering as a school counselor in some ways, because while I had a solid comprehensive program, we weren't meeting the needs of all students, and all staff weren't on the same page, particularly related to social emotional learning, positive intervention support. So I really became involved then. I was introduced to PBIS. I brought PBIS to my school, and we found how having a common language, having a common vision related to social emotional behavioral needs of our students really helped everyone. It helped teachers feel better about what they were teaching. It helped parents and students feel better about our school environment overall. And so that's really how I started. And then it really morphed into presentations, conferences, and collaborative work with all these lovely folks.
And you guys are also speaking at ASCA this summer. So if you guys get a chance and you're going to the American School Counselor Association conference, you'll have to check out their presentation. They always do a great job.
Well, I can say thank you for that. We are so grateful. We have two books that are out, The School Counselor's Guide to MTSS. And we're so grateful that ASCA has worked with us to publish a book for ASCA. And that's Making MTSS Work. It's their purple book. So we do a lot of presentations for ASCA as well, such as the conference this summer. So we're really thrilled with that. Thank you.
Yeah. And webinars, they also got on the ASCA website. So if you remember, check them out.
And we have a YouTube channel. So I don't know if Damian or Emily, if you want to say how you got started in this work, I think it might be helpful for each of us to share our vantage point before we move to the next question.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Damian, you want to go next?
Yes, sure. So for School Counselors for MTSS, it's been, honestly, it's just been more of a passion project. And I happened to run into Emily. I kept on seeing her all over social media. And then we had one of our districts in Kentucky reach out and ask her to speak to them. And I think she and I were co-presenting for the same organization on the same day. And I had a chance to hear her. She had a chance to hear me. And we were basically saying a lot of the same things. And I reached out to her afterwards. And I was like, that was so much fun. I've got to work with you. Is there a way for me to get involved with what you're doing? Wherever you're going, you know, I see passion behind that. I see commitment behind that. And you are creating a following, and I just want to be part of that. And so fortunately for me, she reached back out and said that she'd be pleased if I learned more about the group and joined. And since then, we've hit the ground running, and we've been writing, we've been presenting. You know, as you said, Priscilla will be in ASCA in Austin, Texas this summer. So it's just been an absolute pleasure to get to be part of this group, and also just to make lifelong friends.
I love that. And more than anything, we have a really solid group of about 7 or 8 of us that are, I consider friends and first, and then also colleagues. So it's been a lot of fun on this journey. It's been almost 10 years together.
Wow, that's awesome.
As a group. It's been really, really neat, actually. It's been amazing. Presented all over, books, research, connecting with folks and helping to make schools better. So where I started in the mid-2000s or so, I became a school counselor. And my principal, as a brand new school counselor, said, hey, will you start our PBIS team as the coach and go to this 2-day training? And I said, sure. But really, I had no idea what this was because I hadn't learned about it in our grad program. We didn't have articles in our journals at that time. There weren't presentations for school counselors. So I went to the session, and when I heard the goals and the purpose behind PBIS, which we're now calling really more MTSS, and I thought, this is the same goals as school counseling. Why are we talking about MTSS or PBIS over here in one silo and school counseling in another silo? All right, so I drew a triangle in my office desk, and I mapped out all of the ASCA roles. What does a school counselor do according to ASCA? I put them onto this triangle. What do school counselors do for all, some, and few? And as it turns out, a few years later, my path crossed with both Jen Bettersby-Bond and Peg Donahue. We were all new faculty. We'd all been previous school counselors and really seen the magic. And they had done this same thing themselves. And we were trying to figure out, how do we teach this to our future school counselors? There aren't books. There's not research. There's not presentations. And we're like, well, let's just do this ourselves. And so School Counselors for MTSS was really born. And along the way, we've picked up so many wonderful folks, such as the folks on the call, like Damian, Jacob Olson, Rebecca Pianta, et cetera. So it's really been a wonderful group, and a way of really just to see school counselors are so busy. Every time we work with folks, we hear there's just more needs than what we can possibly do, more asks of us, especially that has been magnified during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So because of that, how can we work smarter, not harder? And so aligning, instead of being these silos with school counseling here and the rest of the school over here, how can we really align? And I think MTSS is really a nice bridge to help weave us into the fabric of the school.
Yeah. And I love it. I know, like, in our school district in particular, we really use it and we align it with everyone on the team so they could see the tier one, tier two, tier three for the college, career, academic, social, emotional. So it's great. I love it. How can school counselors work with colleagues and stakeholders to ensure our schools meet the needs of all students and prepare them for the future?
So we have to make sure that we're listening first. Traditionally, educators, we make a whole lot of assumptions. And those assumptions really impact our kids, and not only our kids, but also their families. You know, so, and let me just say, we all have great intentions. So it's not, you know, it's not a knock on educators at all. It's just what we have traditionally done is we've made assumptions based on those needs. So instead of making assumptions, we've got to listen. Let's start asking our families and asking our students, what is it that you need? We can do that through surveys or needs assessments, right? We can also be data driven, as Dr. Goodman-Scott said, and we can look at, you know, what is the data telling us? Can we look at our military connectedness data? Can we look at the post-secondary data? Where are our students leaving us and going to in terms of universities? Where do we have the highest rates of entrance into universities in our state and in or around us? And then how are our students doing? Are they actually finding success? Are they staying beyond the first year? If not, maybe we need to look at our systems. So if we do that listening and if we are data driven, then we can take it to the next step, and then let's start with tier one, right? So right. If we use the example of college applications, right? So let's say that our students and their families have said, you know, you all do a lot of parent nights and you introduce us to a lot of universities. We have a lot of FAFSA nights, but we don't even know how to fill out a college application. And, you know, can we just start there? Well, in tier one, a school counselor's role can be, I'm going to model filling out a college application for my teachers. And then I'm going to inspire them and empower them to feel like they can do the same for their students and their families, right? So now, as a school counselor, I'm not just saying, well, I'm the only one with this knowledge that can help my students. Now I'm actually empowering my entire school staff to support my students in this.
Yeah, right? And I love that.
Yeah. So, and what's cool about that is when we start to model, we know that more information is going to be retained and more people are going to feel like they can do it. We tend to present a lot, and I'm totally guilty of that too, right? I'm the guy that used to do like 100 slides for a couple hour presentation.
Yeah, instead of teaching lessons, yeah.
Right. So what I'm trying to shift to and what our group is trying to shift to is cognitive coaching, right? Where we're modeling how to do things and putting people in a position to where they truly feel like they can do it. Let's take scenarios, right? The scenario that I just mentioned, if we take that one scenario and we say, what does this look like in an MTSS model? And we say, all right, in tier one, the school counselor is going to empower all teachers with college applications. In tier two, we're going to have some individuals that may just not feel like they totally still understand how they can do that. So maybe in tier two, we're going to work with our school counselor and maybe a college readiness coach. And we're going to create workshops for students and their families to do college applications together in these small groups. Well, that's going to work for many of those kids and their families, but still we're going to have few that may still struggle and have other needs. So in tier three, we're going to work more individually with those few that need extra help and provide that support. All right, so that's just one example of how in an MTSS model, a school counselor can really take it from a tier one whole school approach down to tier two and then to tier three.
Yeah, which is more systemic and easier on everybody because then we're all working together as a team, right?
Yes. And when you feel like you can do something, when you feel like, oh my gosh, I can own this, it becomes something that you're passionate about. And then you start challenging yourself. Well, I helped 20 kids this time fill out a college application. Can I help 30 the next time? Can I help 40 the next time? You know, so it becomes, as you said, something that's systemic and exciting for all involved.
Yeah. And then it empowers the students. Maybe they'll help their peers. And I think you kind of answered the next question, but
jump into that, can I just say two quick things, Damian? Everything you say, I just love listening to you in the spirit of talking about listening. I love listening to you speak. And I also want to emphasize, I love what you said about listening to all these stakeholders, such as students. And I forgot to mention a few minutes ago, one of our collaborators, Dr. Natalie Edermanasinghe, and this is a big part of her research as well, is prioritizing and highlighting the voices of our youth through her youth participatory action research. So I forgot to give her a shout out earlier today. So I wanted to bring that full circle and then talk about, most of us on the call here went to the evidence-based school counseling conference recently, one of my favorite conferences all year. And that really was a thread that I heard woven throughout the conference as well, is that focus on highlighting and prioritizing community family voices, and then really especially students, like our K through 12 students.
So one of our favorite quotes, Dr. Edermanasinghe's, I'm sorry, Natalie, I'm still working on it, but one of our favorite quotes is, if it's about us, without us, it's not for us. And so when you think about that quote and you think about your students, if it's about them, without them, it's not for them, right? So we've always got to make sure that their voices are elevated and at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be about the kids.
Perfect. I love it. Great quote. Such a good one.
I'll have to write that down. How can school counselors align MTSS with the Ask a National model?
That's a great question. I think Damian really showed how school counselors can utilize MTSS. I think what school counselors do in terms of national model, it fits within a triangle. So Emily, Peg, and I created, it's actually on our Twitter feed, anyone can download it. We put the ASCA model within the MTSS frame because what we do should not be separate and outside of MTSS. We should be collaborating with our stakeholders in terms of making the school counseling mindsets and behaviors, our goals, our mission and vision should be directly aligned with MTSS. So I see a lot of school counselors doing beautiful work with integrating their mental health initiatives, really thinking about that it's not siloed. They're not over here in charge of this. They are, it's similar to Damian's college and career readiness. They are integrating at tier one, mental health, social emotional strategies for all students. And they're not just the ones doing it. They are working with a team of individuals. So they are a member of the MTSS team. They are bringing some information from the model to the MTSS team, whether that's social emotional learning, restorative practices, trauma informed strategies, and that's getting woven into the school as a whole. I think it's, to us, it just makes so much sense that it's almost sometimes hard to give examples because they shouldn't be separated.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely does. And it should just flow together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can you talk about how data can be collected through MTSS?
Well, data is collected through, data's collected constantly in our schools. And so I think the beauty of what school counselors can bring to that is that often we're looking at that big picture data that the academic, the college career outcomes, the testing data, the office discipline referral data, we look at all of that data. We can utilize that and bring that down to know who might need a bit more. And what both Emily and Damian just said is that we also sometimes get stuck on that data. So we need to bring the voices in. And if we are going to be anti-racist and culturally responsive, we need to be having the conversations. We need to be asking our students, why do you think there are so few of our Black students involved in ninth grade algebra? What do you think is happening here? Where is the gap? Instead of us making the assumptions and trying to put some interventions in place that may have nothing to do with what the actual problem is. Yeah. That also means we have to look systemically at what's happening, and we have to look at the systems that are within our schools.
Yes, I love that. What can school counselors do to address inequity in schools? I think you kind of addressed that.
Yes. Yes. So I love what Dr. Betters-Boubon just spoke about. One thing to kind of simplify data that I found for school counselors that might be helpful is just to refer to it as ABC data. So attendance, behavior, and course passing data. So if we focus on that while also focusing on bringing those voices in and elevating those voices, we can certainly think about challenging some of the inequities. Some of the other things that we're looking at here in Kentucky is we're looking at students that might be overrepresented in certain areas. So like if there's overrepresentation with that B, the behavior or the behavioral referrals by, let's say, Black students or Latino students, then we have a systems issue, right? And unfortunately, we tend to look at that as a youth issue. Well, they should stop getting in trouble or they should stop doing this. When if there is that kind of overrepresentation, again, that we can't point to the finger, we can't point the finger at kids. We've got to look at ourselves and say, what's going on here? Right. In Kentucky, we're talking a lot about windows and mirrors. Okay. Think about this. So do our kids have a chance to look at windows, look through windows and see the perspectives of people that don't necessarily look like them? And then do they have a chance to look into mirrors and get a chance to see themselves in the curriculum or themselves represented in our culture and climate, right? Is there a sense of belonging? In Kentucky, we recently added a B to our division. So no longer are we the Division of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion. We are now the Division of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging, right? Okay. So creating a sense of belonging is going to be another piece of breaking down some of those inequities. I also love what some of my colleagues said. If we can be transparent, which sometimes we find hard to do if we're honest, but if we can allow our students and their families to get a peek behind the curtains of what's really happening, they can actually look at the data and let's let them offer some solutions to some of the problems, right? Yeah. We just spoke about Natalie, and Natalie's making me very jealous right now because she just got a new job and is going to be moving to California.
Oh, really?
she did. She's going to be at Cal State, so I'm very jealous. But one of the things that, as my colleagues mentioned, she loves YPAR, Youth Participatory Action Research. How can we help our students see these inequities and then help us resolve them, right? What ideas can we work on together? This can look like a PBL, project-based learning. How can we together figure out ways to turn these inequities around? So that's just a few ideas around this, but there are so many more.
Yeah, I love that you included belonging in that because I think that's so important because we could just talk about it, but we got to make sure that we're including that. Or what practices can school counselors use to close achievement gaps?
So I love this conversation we're having right now because it all centers around equity, access. We're going to lead into culturally sustaining practices, as well as the use of data is so core to all of these. So I think it comes down to if we want to close achievement gaps, we have to first understand like what is the root cause. So Jen, you have that great story about the school bus. I always love to share that story and attribute it to you. Do you want to share that now?
Sure. So when I was in this, actually, I think answers a number of questions. So this is what we keep doing to you, Priscilla. We're sorry. We just keep, everything is connected.
We're overachieving.
No, go for it. I love
We're
it.
We're all connected.
So when I was a school counselor, and this relates to what Damian was talking about before, we would get a lot of bus reports. And part of the job, one of my duties sometimes was to respond to those bus reports. We started noticing that there was a number of bus reports that were coming from a particular bus. And it was a bus that had a lot of Black and Brown students on it. So there was this automatic assumption with some of the individuals from our community, which was largely white, was that this must be a problem with our students. right? Because mm-hmm. we're getting these bus referrals. There is a problem. But it wasn't until we actually started to look at that data and start to really ask some hard questions that we were able to discover that this was a bus where there were a lot of inequities. This was a bus route, which was the longest. Students were on the bus upwards of 30 to 45 minutes because it was a neighborhood that was farthest away from our school. When we looked at attendance on this bus, we also noted that this bus was completely full. Like there were other bus routes where there would be going out into the country and there'd maybe be six students on it. This bus was chock full of students. There were three to a seat. So not only was it a long bus route, but it wasn't equitable in terms of the expectations for students. The students were packed on this bus. What we could have done in that scenario is we could have said that this is a student problem. Let's get parents on the phone. Let's start some individual behavior plans. Let's, right? And we did do some of that, right? The principal did do a seating chart, things like that. But it really was when we stopped and thought, what is this like? Like in talking to some of the students who are on that bus, this was their experience. And so rather than situating the problem on the student, the principal that I was working with took that data to our superintendent and said, this, we have an inequity here. We have a problem here. We need to add a different bus route because this is problematic. And after, right, a few months, they were able to do that. And immediately the bus reports went down. So this wasn't a problem that was situated within students, it was a problem that was situated within the system. And so sometimes in our roles, as school counselors, as individuals who hold some power, we have to look at not just the problem, but what is the root cause of the problem so that we can intervene on that level.
Yeah, that's such a great story.
Isn't it a great story? And so a part of what helps us to get to that, if Jen and colleagues, if they would have only looked at the outcome data, the referrals, like then they would have stayed at the surface level, but really to get inequities, and it's a social justice issue, is they looked at other types of data. They talked to students. They went and like observed the bus, what's happening. They looked at past year's, bus route. So there's a great book that Jen and Dr. Kara Aiva, I believe, recommended called Street Data. And Street Data is a book that talks about all the different types of data you can use to supplement the outcome data. So we're not looking at just outcome, because that really ties us in to just one piece of data without knowing the whole picture. So how do we look at that whole picture? Because if I were to say there's too much fighting at school, go solve it. Like, well, what does that mean? Who's fighting? When are they fighting? Is it teachers? Is it students? Like, what's going on? But if I'm able to say, all right, there's a 25% increase in discipline referrals in the fourth grade at 12:30 on recess because they're fighting over access to the equipment. Like, that's very specific. I can do something very specific with that later statement. The first statement, there's just fix the fighting. Like, I don't know what to do with that. So we have to use multiple forms of data to really see the whole picture. And that really helps us address inequities and equity gaps, opportunity gaps, et cetera.
I'll have to check out that book. Who is the author on that one? Do you have
Jamila Dugan and Shane Safir.
Okay.
It's an incredible book. In Kentucky, we're about to do a book study with that, with all of our diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging district coordinators and regional coordinators. So it's incredible.
That is so cool. I love that. I want to hear more about that, Damian.
Yes.
Yeah, that's such a great idea. I'll have to check out that book. I'm also part of a book club that one of the school counselors is leading in Indiana. She's amazing. And she kind of started it a couple of years ago. And we've just been reading different books on diversity and equity and anti-racism. So I'll have to recommend that to our book club.
Yeah. And hopefully you'll let us and your listeners know how we can get involved with that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys want information, I'll go ahead and send that out to you guys. And if you would like to join, anyone's welcome to join the book club.
So one thing I've been thinking about is proximity. And even though, all our group is really from all over the country, one thing that you'll constantly hear at the end of our calls is, this was so nice. I needed this. I needed time with you. I needed time with this team, because we all have our own journeys and our own obstacles that we're trying to overcome. And we see this with school counselors all over the country and quite frankly, all over the world, is, you know, you have such a different lens than most other people in your school. So our group would highly encourage you to find that proximity with other school counselors, whether that's in your district, in your region, in your state, you know, with ASCA. It is so important to have a community and feel like you have other people that have been in your shoes and can empathize with you.
Yeah. And plus it energizes you. Like, it just really encourages you to see people that are so passionate and like love what they do and really helping people.
100%.
Can you tell us about your books? Where can we find them? Your social media, your website?
Absolutely. We are, so our website is www.schoolcounselors4MTSS.com. So you can find all of our information there. You can also, that you can link to our books, both of the books that we have. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook and we are on Instagram. So just look us up. I think we're usually SC4MTSS. Twitter, we are SCHCounS, C-O-U-N-S for MTSS. We're very active on social media, so be sure to give us a follow. We send something out generally almost every day highlighting different things that we find to be really important and relevant to the field.
Yeah, and it's so encouraging. Like, you also post positive quotes, and I know you have templates that school counselors and educators can use. Like, I saw one that was from Oklahoma, and that was, yeah, I believe it was from Sarah Kirk, if I could be wrong, if you could let me know.
No, completely. Sarah Kirk, yep, the head of school counseling in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Shout out to Sarah. She's awesome. You're doing great work.
So great, Sarah. So great.
Yeah. So check out that template. It's on their social media, and you could just go ahead and run with it and add whatever you would like to add in your school.
I have to give a shout out to our program coordinator for comprehensive school counseling in Kentucky, Heather Bushelman. You're doing a great job as well. So I can't forget my own people. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of people doing amazing work. I just happened to see that one from Sarah Kirk and that you guys had reposted. But check out their social media. And can you guys tell me, if you could change one thing in education, what would it be and why?
I can start. I would ensure that social emotional learning was a part of every class, no matter what. I would require it. I think that there's so much sit and get still, and there are sages on the stage still, and I think we are missing a huge opportunity when we don't listen and learn from our students and with our students. The with is important. Learn with our students. If we can show them that we're lifelong learners and that we can actually learn from them, then there's going to be much more buy-in in our schools. There's going to be a stronger school culture and climate. Kids are going to be inspired and empowered to lead. There can be just a tremendous amount of benefits. So for me, it's easy. Requiring social emotional learning to be part of every single class, every single day.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think that's a question we get often is, did you talk to the students? Absolutely. It's a huge part of our job.
Well, I'm happy to jump in next. So I worked with the school several years ago, and I saw then that a new principal had been in place. It was year six or so for her. And when she started the school, there were a lot of very intense needs. Students, the teacher turnover was very high. They were leaving. It was supposed to be a magnet school, but they couldn't offer the accelerated classes because they couldn't fill them. Parents didn't want to opt to send their children to the school. A lot of violence and discipline issues. And the neighborhood had this really negative stigma towards the school. And the principal came in, and in 5 years, she really revamped the culture and climate of the school. And the test scores, the teacher turnover, I mean, the news was always in this school saying, look at this cool new initiative. Look at this great thing. Look at these more accelerated classes, more students registering for these accelerated classes. It was hard to get into. And in 5 years, she turned it around, and I was able to interview her. And I said, what did you do differently here? And what do you attribute to this? And the first thing she said is, she said, it's all about relationships. I sat down with every staff member and I said, where are you? What do you need? What's going on here? I listened to them. I celebrated them. And I built this community of culture and care that started with the school staff. And then when they felt their buckets were full and appreciated, they poured more into their students and their students were achieving more. And it was this incredible climate that she made. And I think right now, more than ever, it's been really hard. We're 2 years since this pandemic started, as well as this heightened focus on the racial justice movement. And it has been a very difficult time for most people in K through 12 education. I was talking with a teacher yesterday in tears, feels like she's not appreciated, anxiety, more responsibilities than she's ever had. So for me right now, I think the best way to help support our students and families is to really pour into our educators so they know they are cared for, they are appreciated, if there are things we can remove from their plates so they can get back to doing what they love to do, which is teaching children. And so I think that's what we need to do is that focus on relationships really and care and concern for everyone in our school. So I'm pro-relationship.
Mm-hmm. It's so important.
I love that, Emily. I would take it even a step further. I love relationships. I love SEL. I would change our definition of what it means to learn, so that we were more focused on the process rather than the outcome, to afford our staff the freedom to actually teach and to really encourage that lifelong learning. That's really what we want. We want kids to be inquisitive. We want our students to want to learn. We want what we want. We want students to come to a place where they feel like they belong because there's something that sparks their interest. So I would want to change the overall definition of learning so that there's more freedom for students and staff within the school
building. Yeah, that's so important. And I know Damian just posted that's so powerful. It is.
It is. And also makes me think about like
beautiful
equity and grading. You know, when we say that learning is about like mastery and growth, you know, but we're still averaging in grades from the beginning of the semester, you know, how is that equity? So yeah, I think there's so much to what Jen just said, and also Emily. So I'm moved by both of you. Thank you.
I am moved by both of you as well. I loved hearing both of those responses. I agree, they resonate. And I'm like, oh, I love it. Gosh, I love our brainstorming and sharing and just the thought sessions. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, I know people are going to love this interview. what do you guys have coming up next?
We've got the second edition. We've got the second edition of the School Counselor's Guide to MTSS. So we're working on that right now, and that should be published next summer, right, Emily? The summer of 20?
Yep. That mm-hmm. summer. And we also are just rolling out, we're going to meet later today, we're rolling out a summer workshop. We're very excited about it. We did it last year, was the first year, the inaugural one. We had really overwhelming responses, so we offered a second one last summer. This year, we're just going to do that one. So we're having a full day workshop. And then we've been talking about rolling out some type of an ongoing professional development throughout the year. So we'll have one topic by one of our members in September and one in October, one in November on topics that are important to folks, such as universal mental health screening, trauma-informed practices, the use of data in school counseling and MTSS. So all of these SEL, so all of these topics. So we're planning for the summer workshop now. That'll be the end of June, right? The 23rd, that Thursday. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've seen a nod from Jen. And then stay tuned. We're still working with all of our members. It's going to be a team effort to do this year-long PD. It'll be one afternoon or so once a month, September through April.
And it'll be virtual? Stay tuned.
It'll be virtual. Everything's on Zoom. Zoom is the way of the world, and it helps us connect, speaking of relationships, right? So everything will be on Zoom, and our goal is to keep the cost down considerably to make it doable for our educators and school counselors.
Awesome. Well, we went through a lot of questions. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
That we appreciate what they're doing, that we see them, we hear them, we appreciate them. And we're really here to support them build equitable, safe spaces for all students.
100% agree. We see you. We hear you. We love you. We're here for you.
And your jobs are hard. They've always been hard, and they've been a lot harder with the pandemic and the racial justice movement and racial injustices that you're processing everything happening in the world in your office. It's a hard job, and your job is also needed more now than it ever has been. And we're just so grateful for what you do every day. So thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate all the work that you're doing to help make it a little bit easier for us with all your templates and your workshops. At the end of our podcast, we like to share the Sunshine Spotlight. Can you tell me at least one thing that's made you happy this week?
I went to the Grand Canyon with my family, and it was absolutely breathtaking, beautiful, awe-inspiring, and lovely.
I love that. So knowing I have a really busy month coming up, I actually took a personal day yesterday and I planted flowers and had a great lunch with my spouse. It was just a great day in the middle of the week, not working. I scheduled it like weeks in advance to make sure there are no meetings, but it was just a great mental health day.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for me, I've got two. One, I took a risk for a presentation, and going back to the cognitive coaching, really used scenarios more than slides, and so that went really well. We had some great participation. People felt involved. They felt like they were part of the change using Kentucky's brand new equity dashboard. So that was amazing. And then the other one has just been this week. My wife and I have just been dreaming about next week. You know, next week is spring break with our little boys, and we get to go to Florida. And we've just been dreaming about sitting by the beach, just in warmer weather. And just having some time, intentional time with our little family unit. So that's been just a huge blessing and something to look forward to.
Wow, that's good. I love all those stories. I'm on spring break, and I'm currently visiting family in Texas. So I'm glad to be with my family. And also, of course, to meet with you guys. Like, I'm a huge fan of you all. And it's such an honor to meet you and hopefully get to meet you in person at ASCA. If you guys could just say goodbye to all our listeners out there.
Thank you. This was wonderful. Thanks for having us. And it was really a wonderful time. Thanks for inviting us. And thanks for the work that you're doing as well. We really appreciate it.
Yes. Thanks to everyone.
Yes. Look for more information about upcoming learning opportunities. Thanks for listening.
Right, bye, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Reach Higher Riverside. You can follow us on Twitter at RH Riverside. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Reach Higher Riverside. You can also subscribe to our iTunes or Google Play Music. Give us a rating. Thank you so much for listening in. We appreciate all of you tuning in. And as Michelle Obama would say, when they go low, we reach higher.